All right.
Mike, I am so mad at you right now.
It's funny how little I care.
Please don't ever do that again.
I kind of like this homebrew intro here. It's good.
I did it once before, and you used it, AJ.
Yeah.
Now that you're mad at me, again. You don't like it anymore. All right, anyways. Hello and welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast for November 7th, 2009. This is Mike Minotti, joined by AJ. Say hi.
Yeah.
He's thrilled to be here.
Yay.
And our good friend Mark Beige Whiting.
How are you, gentlemen?
Delightful.
Hello, Minotti guys.
I'm fine. I don't let nothing get me down.
We had some technical difficulties.
We're starting off 45 minutes late.
These are the result of Mike just being completely disorganized.
This isn't true. Because of me, we're recording at all. You just went to wallow in self-pity all night. I was like, why don't we do this? Here's a real solution. You're like, I have to do that. I'm like, yeah, probably.
To be fair, we have proof that Skype has, or PSP is a capable Skype device.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It was working. All right, so here... The show, why don't we get going? We'll talk about video games, and maybe AJ will feel better. Maybe he won't, but we'll get along. We're going to start off with the news, then we'll go into the quiz. Then we got the an either-or segment. Then we'll talk about our week in gaming, then the game releases, and that'll be it. So why don't you get started? Did you add Joe and Mac yet?
No, I was just going to turn that to you.
Well... It's not really yet. Besides the guy saying they're going to do it, but apparently they're going to make a remake of the original Joe and Mac, which is fantastic.
Pretty exciting.
It's just weird though, because it seems like they're going out of their way to like remake or make new versions of all these really obscure platforming games for like the 16-bit systems that I liked.
Didn't you read that article this week by Hudson Soft about how they're totally milking downloadable content? All these companies that you thought had disappeared like 10 years ago, apparently they just went all digital. There's new Bonk coming out, new Bomberman.
It's great.
Adventure Island stuff, yeah.
This is why downloadable content's awesome. The downloadable
indeed.
Game. Downloadable
right.
Games,
real yes.
News, AJ.
Okay, first of all, we have not one but two new class announcements this week for Star Wars The Old Republic. The first one is sure to shock you all, the Jedi Knight.
Wait, that wasn't announced?
They hadn't gone into, like, details on the class yet. That has, like, a whole page set up on the official site, and they got some cool stuff they show, like, how, it's still not super specific, but these videos show how, like, you could do, like, kind of these finishing moves that, like, they actually end and animate so that you automatically move on to the next target, so there's no time wasted as you've taken down guys and stuff. It's neat. They also revealed the Imperial Agent at a conference somewhere in Europe this week. This is basically the game's kind of, like, rogue class, I guess. Sniper rifles and stealth gear and subterfuge and what have you.
Until they unveil one of those Imperial Guardsmen in the bright red outfit with the little black and white or black visor, I'm not interested.
Oh, yeah, yeah. See, we were talking about those today because they were limited edition Christmas ornaments at Hallmark last year. And we were going to get two of them to, like, flank an Emperor Palpatine ornament, but they sold out.
Don't you want to know what those guys do?
They just guard the Emperor.
That'd be a very boring class to play. You just gotta stand there.
You just stand with the Emperor. You'd see a lot. You'd get out to interesting places.
I guess so. Okay, so I take in this game, classes are specific to faction.
Yeah. There's the Republic and the Imperials.
Right, okay. The Imperials? How are they called the Imperials? Now that I think about it, yeah, why is it called an Imperial Agent? Is there an Empire?
Yeah, well, actually, is it in the Old Republic? There were Sith, right? If they're, it's the same time
period
as Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah, they were called the Imperial something or other. Shoot, now see, I'm not quite as hip on my
See, that seems a little lame to me, that it just so happens to be the Imperial something. It's that, yeah, don't worry.
They're not the Rebels, it's the Republic.
He was the second coming of the Empire. It was played out by that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you be a droid? I want to be a droid.
They haven't announced it yet, but I wouldn't
surely
be surprised.
You can.
You better.
All right. Okay. So after the Nintendo DSi XL announcement last week, Nintendo's president, Iwata-san, was pontificating on the next version of the DS. And one thing he said that they're looking at including in the system is a Kindle-like free, always-on 3G connection, which I think is a fantastic idea. As he noted, it would probably, though, like drive up the hardware price of the initial cost, but you're getting free internet connectivity out of it, so it would depend if consumers go for it. I just think, though, if anyone was going to do this, I'd almost rather Sony, because, I mean, honestly, how much you're using your DS online as compared to using your PSP online? For, like, shopping in particular. Because I don't know how well a connection like that would be for online gaming.
I'm hoping that if Nintendo, all of a sudden, they had the DS connected online all the time, that their online functionality would improve.
Yeah, that's the hope, I think.
I mean, they got to do something for the next-gen DS.
I don't know, man. You're working against Japanese culture. You're talking about a culture where it's impolite to invite other people to your game. Or to acknowledge that other people are playing.
Yeah, but they need to, and I'm sure they're well aware of that. They have to appeal to Western markets a bit more so. Right?
I don't know. There's a lot of iPhone
globalists
in the West. I think it's past the post.
I don't know.
I feel like if they just made a more concerted effort to make actual downloadable games and not just more cameras and clocks. And, like, you know, that was what this service focused on, I think that'd be really sweet. Or even if this ushered in the DSi virtual console, where you could get, you know, Super Nintendo games on your DS for, like, $5 a pop.
Pokemon MMO handheld?
Oh, don't even start.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That'd be incredible, actually.
I'd be down for that.
Again, though, like you said, I mean, if this happened, the price of the next DS would likely be, like, $250. I mean, do you think that's too much?
How much? 250?
That'd be my guess.
200. Well, what I look at is, right now, the Kindle and the upcoming Barnes & Noble Nook both do this right now. They are $259. And, I mean, part of that cost is you're not paying for this 3G connection month to month, and they just kind of build in the cost of that to the initial cost of the device. So, I personally understand where that cost comes from, and knowing it, I think I'd be okay with it. I just don't know if you could convince consumers, remember this thing that used to cost you $170, now it's $270, but, you know, we're giving you free internet access, and they're going to be like, so? Like, I just don't know if the consumer would be ready for it.
And I don't know. Like I said, they're not going to be able to do another retrofit DS, I think. I think they're at a point where they're done with that. Say what you want about this DSi XL. It sounds like a non-factor to me. I don't even understand that. But I just think that, you know, I mean, the DS came out in 2004. You know, something new has got to be coming within it. We got to hear about it at least in the next couple of years.
Right.
And having a constant online connection, that seems like something you can do that's new and feasible. So.
And competes with the iPhone.
Right, exactly. So that's what I think. I think we'll see it. I mean, I don't think it'll be too much of a... I don't think it's going to bother them too much if they don't think that Japanese gamers will be into it that much.
Right. Okay. Let's talk more about how Modern Warfare 2 is pissing everybody off.
It's pissing me off.
So first of all, we have no party chat in the 360 version to prevent online cheating.
That can't be true. Is that
true?
Apparently
it is.
No.
Yeah, I guess.
No, think about that. No, you just can't do that. Faze, back me up on this. How can you have the game set up so that you can't be in a party of friends playing the game and talking with each other?
It doesn't sound possible.
I mean, you would just mean you'd have to use the game's party chat, not the Xbox Live wide party chat, which, if you're all playing Modern Warfare together, that doesn't matter. Where it sucks, though, is people like to use the party chat where them and all their friends will be playing different games, but they like to talk to each other. This kills that. And, you know, it's like, oh, you know, we want to stop cheating in our game.
What are they afraid of?
Like, two people on one side and two people on the other side are just going to walk around collecting achievements?
Killing each other? But you know what? That's what the freaking telephone's for. Like, are you going to, like, somehow remotely disable their cell phone while they're playing Modern Warfare 2?
Like, isn't it a given that in Team Fortress there are entire servers that are just set up for the purpose of achieving
farming? That's what I said. These people, they think they're too important. Who gives a shit? I don't care if someone on the other team is voice coordinating. If it matters to them that much, good for them. You know, like, if I want to be able to use party chat. It's a system-wide feature. I don't feel like they should be allowed to override that.
It's if that is actually there, like, even if they say it's there, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt, because if that's actually there, that is just beyond stupid. Give me a fucking break.
The next big shocker came once again to the PC crowd in the revelation that the game will, like the console version, only support 9 versus 9 and not a higher number.
Okay.
This one's not as big a deal, because, I mean,
it's
my argument...
It's pretty stupid still.
It is, but, like, my argument to this, when people complain, like, how Gears of War was only, like, 5-on-5, if that's what the game's designed for, that's what it's designed for. Bigger numbers of players does not automatically equal a better online experience.
Hey, Meg.
I mean, Sony's... I was just going to say, I think Sony seems to think that, but outside of that, I mean...
Don't you want to play
that's
with
what's designed for,
people?
Fine.
Come on.
No.
How many people are playing Counter-Strike, right?
Only if it's Planets... Planetscape or Planetside 2, will I care?
No, I don't know. I feel like you have to have at least 16 per team. Those are mostly like the Team Fortress games I played. 16 versus 16. If you're going PC,
like I said, if
18 is small. No. Listen. Okay, if you have 4 players or 5 players on the team, I could buy the whole it's designed for that thing. If you have 9 people in a map, you could probably stretch that to 16.
We'll see.
At that point, it's not a design choice. Well, this is for 9 players. That means it's for about several players. You can get more in there. 9, that's small. That's just small. That is weak for a PC game. If this game doesn't... It sounds like it's just not a PC game anymore. It sounds like they're porting over a console version.
Well, the PC hasn't been the focus of the industry for quite some time now. I'm sure if you counted up the number of people who bought Modern Warfare on Xbox as compared to the PC, that you'd see where the money was.
That doesn't give
doesn't surprise me.
It doesn't see everyone's giving these guys a free pass just by being too logical about it. I think it's still dickheadish. And you know what? When you make enough money on your game, typically you kind of throw in some things that maybe aren't going to be profitable for you, but they're sort of community like things. Like, oh, we'll make that. Here's dedicated servers. Here's a higher level players per team. You know, just things. I mean, for God's sakes, how much money do they make? Do you think they can afford not to piss off their fans? I don't even care. I don't have a dog in this fight. I could give a shit about Modern Warfare 2. I'm just saying. Like, I don't know why they hate their fans.
But Mike, listen.
Listen. I know that it's very popular. I know that it's very popular for 360 stuff. But a ratio of like the people who bought Modern Warfare 1 on the PC, those people are playing Modern Warfare a lot, and they are in guilds and stuff. And they want
the
dedicated servers.
They're called clans outside of Warcraft.
Okay, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. What do you want
to
say?
Mike, listen to me. See, it is a PC game, and it's because, I mean, it's using Steam. Everybody likes Steam, right?
Oh, that thing where the Trojan horse Steam?
Yes, yes. Direct to Drive is not happy, and they are refusing to sell Modern Warfare 2. Because it basically forces you to use Steam, which is one of their direct competitors.
Understandable.
And, you know, their beef is not with Activision. In fact, I believe they're giving, like, $5 off coupons to a bunch of Activision games to apologize to their customers. I'm sure, like, there's a bunch of people who are like, well, you know, I was going to get it on Direct2Drive, but now they're not selling it. I'm not buying the game. Yeah, that's going to work, guys. You just screwed yourself out of a bunch of money, but whatever.
Well, I mean, I can understand, because in the long run, it may not be great to... introduce your customers to a rival platform.
Yeah, it is a sticky situation, to be sure. Mm-hmm. And then do we want to get into the controversy of the leaked video?
That's coming up later.
Okay, we'll save that. And happier news, Margaritaville has been trademarked for video game use.
I can guarantee you this is the only gaming podcast who will cover that story.
You're probably... My guess is... that, like, it's going to be, like, a Facebook game or something. This isn't going to be, like,
stupid.
Adventures in Margaritaville.
Look, they made an Iron Chef game. That didn't mean I had to be excited about it. I knew. Yeah, I mean, you got to know what's up. This will not be good. No good will come from this.
All right. No good will also come from, no doubt, suing Activision. once again, because they are not happy that their online or their virtual doppelgangers are being used to sing the songs not by them.
You think that people would know about this at this point?
Is this a big deal? Is this a big deal? If Kurt Cobain sings Johnny Cash songs, who gives a shit? In a forest where the tree falls. Not me.
Well, Gwen Stefani's very upset that her virtual avatar can be used to sing Honky Tonk Woman, which is a song about a prostitute, sung by a man. I could see where you're like, they didn't tell us that. But, you know, and then Activision, of course, is claiming we did. And they're also, I like the way Activision puts it, too. Yet we spoke with their representatives who have years of experience in the entertainment business, so, like, to say, like, they knew this, they should have known it, if not, it's their fault.
I want to know whether Gwen Stefani has ever played Rock Band or Guitar Hero. Because half of those tour buses drive around with copies of Guitar Hero in the bus. Well, so anybody who doesn't know how it works, they need to get back with 2005, before rhythm games became a hugely significant part of the, like, entertainment revenue stream.
Remember how a few weeks ago we talked about how after the Kurt Cobain thing with Courtney Love, John Bon Jovi came out and said how they came to him, and when he found out that his avatar would be used to sing other songs, that's why he said no. He figured it out, so why didn't anyone else figure this out?
I think there was a fine print. I don't think they read it, and you know what? Too bad. Look, they got their bucket load of cash.
What are they worried about? If Bon Jovi sings, you know, Honky Tonk Woman, who cares? Is this a big deal for them?
It's not much of a stretch to imagine that the music types would be upset about something like that, as lame as they already are.
I don't care about the music type. Look, I've seen the Showbiz Pizza Muppets sing gangster rap, and that was awesome. So I have no – it works. It's the 21st century. Remix culture is where it's at. Forget it. These people are whiny. They can just – you know what? They can just not be in the game and not take the big fat paychecks from Activision, and that's the end of it. Quit complaining.
They're just worried about their image.
What's next?
The number one news story of 2009, of course.
Epic Mickey. What this time?
So we found out, I mentioned it before, how there was a little blurb in the Game Informer article about how no one would speak in the game, there'd just be gibberish, and we got some more elaboration on that point from Warren Spector. He made the decision to not have anybody talk in the cartoon Wasteland. His biggest reason doing that is, you know, in his attempt to kind of reinvent Mickey and make him relevant to kids again, he's worried that as soon as Mickey starts talking with a "Hiya, pal!", like, it'll immediately turn off anybody between the ages of, like, 10 and 17.
Who doesn't know Mickey Mouse?
Yeah, I have to say, I don't quite follow him on this. I mean, that's the most recognizable cartoon voice ever.
Maybe not ever.
Who would be more?
Homer Simpson.
No. More than Mickey Mouse? No way.
Yeah, you're wrong.
All right.
Mickey Mouse!
2010. Mickey hasn't said anything for about 20 years.
Mickey's still pretty relevant.
What are you talking about? He's been saying all kinds of things.
No.
Look, I saw him take the Keyblade to somebody in Kingdom Hearts 2, and it was badass, but he did talk like he had a mouthful of helium.
Well, sure. Okay, he's still a cartoon character from the 30s. He has a high-pitched voice. I don't see why that's so bad.
So is it Okami now? Is it all just all the time?
Yeah, it's going to be like Banjo-Kazooie, I guess.
You know what? I prefer just text to that.
Actually, I think it's just text myself.
Now, the Game Informer article said that there's going to be, like, gibberish underneath it.
I don't know. We'll see. But yeah. I wish they would just done voice acting. I mean,
I kind of want to see what Oswald's voice would be.
If his concern is that he's revamping Mickey, I hope he doesn't mean he's going to change Mickey's voice, because I will draw a line there.
Yeah.
If you want to go retro with some things, Mickey, that's fine. You don't change Mickey's voice.
Yeah, I don't think that's a Warren Spector's call to make.
Yeah, honestly. Although apparently this is like becoming a news story, like how Mickey's getting revamped. Our mom heard about it. She's like, did you hear that Mickey's getting revamped?
Oh, it's been in like the New York Times, and I saw an article on AOL.com. And of course, it cracks me up when I read these mainstream articles, because they have so many of the like small details completely wrong. Where the one, like, the AOL article is like, Mickey goes back in time to his old cartoons. I'm like, no, he doesn't. That's not even close to what the plot is.
Oh, man, they're stupid.
I know.
All right, what's next?
Beige, did you get the collector's edition of Demon's Soul?
Yeah, no. I did not.
Okay.
Wait, yes, I did. I think so. Okay, how would I know?
The one that comes with, did it come with a little strategy guide?
No.
Okay, sorry. He didn't.
The Gamerama guys were only able to get in a certain amount of copies. I had to take what I could get.
Right.
It's hard to find in Toronto.
Apparently, the collector's edition strategy guides that came with the game, like, the ink is fading from the covers somehow. I've never heard of problems with strategy guides before, but Atlas is replacing them, and it's kind of interesting the way they're doing it. They're making you mail in the torn-off front cover and the torn-off first page to prove that you have it, and the thinking is, while you're waiting for your replacement, you still have a usable strategy guide, so you're not completely screwed. Kind of a clever way of solving that, I
guess.
Isn't
it just cooler to have a strategy guide whose cover is mysteriously fading due to some kind of arcane power? I mean,
ooh.
I played Demon's Souls. That
it's
wouldn't
a
be
feature.
That wouldn't be outside of the pale at all.
This game is so hard that the strategy guide just starts to disappear.
Yeah, exactly. If they put a bullet point on the front of it that says, guide will start disappearing in, you know, 2 weeks. Finish now.
That's great.
That is great, actually.
Yeah, see, they could have turned that into a PR thing. They could have been like, finish the game now. Will you still have strategies?
Oh, man.
That's awesome. We will hack into game facts and delete every fact once a week.
Demon's Souls, I wouldn't put it past it.
Boy. Let's see. Battlefield Bad Company 2 Beta is coming exclusively to the PlayStation 3 on November 19th. That was kind of a surprise to people. Moving on. Netflix discs should be arriving today or yesterday for people who order them from the Netflix site for the PlayStation 3.
I hate you all.
I know.
Don't talk to me about Netflix. Don't talk to me about your magical technology and your 15 megabits per second south of the border.
Woo! For those wondering what their $40 for Super Street Fighter 4 is going to get them, how about the car crashing bonus stages for Street Fighter 2?
Are they going to say, oh my god, or are they going to say, oh my car? Because that's a big difference. They censored it on the Nintendo.
I don't know. I didn't know that.
I was not aware.
Yeah. But in the arcades, it was blasphemous. On the SNES, it was just dumb.
In addition to those fun minigame modes, we also have some online changes. They're going to set up some kind of tournament system where you could have 9 players, one person acting as virtual tournament director, and you could, like, spectate and watch and play. So that's cool. They're improving the netcode. So, you know, at least they're trying to put stuff in it. I'll give them that.
Okay, I don't know if I should call bullshit on you now or later.
Why?
Let's go now. Well,
okay.
When I was saying Little Big O that I didn't think Left 4 Dead 2 seemed like a worthy sequel, you're like, well, it has new characters and new levels.
It's
and
new. It's completely
you know
new content. It's all brand new. Okay? Super Street
it's
Fighter
the exact,
4.
It doesn't look that new to me.
It's all new levels. It's not like you're playing the same 4 levels from the last game. It's 5 brand new campaigns.
We'll get into it later.
Ugh.
I don't know about Left 4 Dead 2.
What was I saying? Okay. Dedicated servers. Rage. Not going to have them, most likely.
Rage? Who gives a shit?
People? Hey, that's
who cares
game,
about
man.
ID's Rage? It's called Rage for crying out loud. Could they come up with a more generic first-person shooter name?
Anger.
Yes. No.
All right, never mind then.
Rage, seriously, Rage is stupid as hell.
Okay, well, does it excite you to know that Star Trek Online is set to come out in February?
This February?
February 2010.
I'll believe it when I see it. That game,
good night, whoever knocked on my door.
You realize that game was like announced in 2005. I've been waiting some time. That game was supposed to come out in 2007 when it was first announced, back when, somebody else was making it, not Cryptic. Pandorum or something.
I don't think they exist anymore.
No, they don't. They released that one game that was like Roman-themed, I think.
Yeah. Let's see. And the final news story... Child's Play 2009 has begun. Visit Penny Arcade to find details on how you can help sick children.
Okay.
Good. Donate something. I do.
Yeah. I do every year.
Yep.
It's very nice.
You
also,
ready?
Hey, PAX 2010, Yeast.
I'm there.
Registration's open. Me too.
Yeah.
I'm not there yet.
You will be. I think most of the squad is East Coast, so...
And I got a friend who just moved to Boston like 2 weeks ago, and she told me I could stay in her guest room. So
AJ bought a ticket without even consulting me, so I guess I don't think I'm wanted, honestly.
No, you can go. I just wanted to buy my ticket. I got excited.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I bet. I know how it is. All right, anyway.
No, yeah, you know, I'm like, no, you're not allowed to go. I've decided.
All right, quiz time. Oh, got a lot of BioWare questions, so you'll probably be depending on beige for most of this.
I'm up on my BioWare.
Good.
But we got one non-BioWare question. It's our first one.
Okay.
In Joe and Mac, which one has blue hair, Joe or Mac?
Mac.
It's Joe.
Damn it.
You had a 50-50 chance. Don't complain.
Okay. Question two. Here's all our BioWare questions. Name the expansion for the original Baldur's Gate. I want to see if you can get it first, Space, before you jump in there.
All right.
Oh, no, wait. Throne of Baal. That was the sequel. That was the expansion for two.
Correct. Maybe.
Wait, what? Isn't it like the Sword Coast or something? Am I making that up?
Are you? What's your answer?
You're supposed to help me.
I can tell you what it is. Yeah.
All right, what is it?
It's called Tales of the Sword Coast, I believe.
Yeah, see? Yeah. Right. All right.
I was surprised you knew any of it, AJ.
I played it. There was a...
Yeah, I did too.
There were werewolves. Okay.
Question three. Name the only Dreamcast game BioWare developed.
MDK. Wait, now is it the first one or the second one? Shoot. Wait, Paige, you know this for sure? If it was Shiny,
not
did one
sure.
of them.
Not for sure.
Shoot, which one was the BioWare one? I want to say it was the first one. Yeah, I'll say MDK, the first one.
No, MDK 2. You...
God damn it.
You had it. How did you think it was the first one?
I don't know. I talked myself out of it.
We had Next. It. Okay. Question four. In what year was Jade Empire released?
Is that... 03?
Is that it?
Wait, let me think for a second.
I was at PAX at the time. I think
maybe it was 03 or 04.
Don't know. Say 03. Sounds about right.
Now I got myself thinking of my
original Xbox.
Yeah.
Mid-cycle.
I was going to say late cycle. KOTOR was mid-cycle.
You must choose. I don't know the answer to this.
You know what? I'm going to kick myself, and I'm going to say 04.
05.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't realize it was that late.
It was pretty late.
I didn't have an Xbox until way later, almost around the time it was dead, so that's my excuse. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Question 5. What was the name of the engine BioWare created that was used on games like Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale?
The Infinity Engine, as I recall.
Correct.
Yeah.
Bonus question. Name BioWare's first game.
BioWare's first game.
Released in 1996. There's a clue for you.
96. Several years before Baldur's Gate. I do not know.
I feel like I just read it recently when I was reading about Dragon Age stuff. I have no idea.
Shattered Steel.
That's it.
From what I understand, it was kind of like MechWarrior, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. So there that is. All right, guys.
Too bad.
Hey, well, I don't know. You got two, actually.
You were close. Closer. A lot of
it's
the time,
not great.
Though.
If you'd asked me about plot points, I could have helped you out. But MDK 2.
You should have got MDK 2.
I should have. Yeah, that's an embarrassment.
I'm upset.
Yeah.
I was surprised myself to see Jade Empire wasn't released until 05.
Yeah, I thought it was...
MDK is a game the squad should do.
MDK 2, for sure. Because that was a good game.
Yeah, because that was one let you play as all three characters.
Yeah, I would play that into my Dreamcast. That was a fun game. All right. We're going to do either or. So you know how it is.
Rocket.
Two things. You get to pick one over the other. There's points. There's
Mike gives you arbitrary points.
How dare you call them arbitrary? Minus 5 points.
Well, I guess I've been told. All right.
There you go. Now you know better.
Now I know.
We got 10. There's 10 initial ones, and then the lightning round has 5. So let's start. Let's start with Beige's time.
Hit me.
Diablo or Baldur's Gate?
Baldur's Gate. No question.
Explained.
Do we need to have answers? Well, I mean, okay.
Yeah, we got to explain it a little.
Diablo was good. I assume you're talking the original Diablo? compared to the original.
We can say
Baldur's
series
game.
If you want. You can say a combo of Diablo 1 and 2 versus Baldur's Gate 1 and 2.
It's hard. I mean, you're comparing two different things. What, you know, like, what's better, Super Mario RPG or R-Type? You know, they're...
These are more similar than that, maybe. At least in the mind of maybe less educated consumers.
Okay, there's isometric little guys running around hitting things with swords. But that's that's where the differences end, you know? Fallout also had you running around pointing a reticle at people, but it didn't make it an FPS. Like, Diablo appeals to that hindbrain, loot-whoring, I'm killing stuff and getting goodies. Well... I guess what puts Baldur's Gate in front and center for me is that, A, it's based directly out of second edition Dungeons & Dragons, which was, huge for me for many years. And so I immediately have a plus 30 reaction modifier towards it. And
did you check your Thaco?
I check my Thaco regularly. I could have told you how much plus 2 chainmail with mace would have, I could have told you what the die rolls were for that before Baldur's Gate. But Baldur's Gate pioneered a whole bunch of weird stuff. It pioneered romances in games. It pioneered the really deep, multi-threaded discussion trees that have come to be sort of industry standard for RPGs, Western RPGs. It reinvigorated the Western RPG scene. Like Baldur's Gate, what we were talking about on the podcast that we did for you guys when you were down in Florida, is that that game pretty much single-handedly brought back from the dead the Swords and Sorcery pen and paper tabletop role-playing adaptation. So Diablo, it's fun, you know, but it's the equivalent of Bejeweled, you know. You click, you get stuff. You click, you get stuff. I like it. I'll be buying Diablo 3, but, Baldur's Gate, You couldn't hang the text from, or the plot from Diablo around your neck in like a phone book and, wear it around the way that the writers for those old Infinity Engine games did. So.
AJ, what do you think?
Academically, I would almost think Baldur's Gate, but personally, I would say Diablo because that's what I played. I tried Baldur's Gate as a kid, and I think it was just too complicated for me, and especially because I didn't have any basis of understanding for D&D. I feel like if I was 25 when those games came out, I might say Baldur's Gate. But, I mean, Diablo was pretty perfect for me in, like, what was it, 1996 or whenever it came out. Like, click on stuff, get a bunch of items. It's very fast-paced. It's very exciting. Diablo 2, playing it online, was great fun. And it helped, too, that, you and me, our brother Chris, my friend Kip, a bunch of my other friends, we were all playing it online and having fun with it like that. So... just from, what I played and what I liked more at the time, I'll say Diablo.
Okay. Next one. Does this one start with AJ? KOTOR or Mass Effect?
KOTOR. I like Mass Effect. I still haven't finished it, and I want to. I know you're going to yell at me.
By the way, Knights of the Old Republic, for those who don't know what a KOTOR is.
Yeah. If you don't know what KOTOR is, you're listening to the wrong podcast.
I know. Yeah. I just got worried for a second.
But, I mean, KOTOR, first of all, it was like after... what people call the disappointment of the prequel trilogies. This was like proof that Star Wars can still be good when handled right. I think it defied a lot of people's expectations. Because I know for one, when I heard BioWare's making a Star Wars RPG, my initial image in my head was like an Infinity Engine game with like Luke Skywalker and Han Solo. And I was like, that doesn't sound like it'd be very good. And the game blew me away. It was really fun to play. It looked gorgeous for the time. And, I mean, that plot twist in the game is still one of my favorite moments of gaming ever. I just was leaping out of my seat in excitement. I just thought it was so cool.
Beige? Yes, I will cut you off after a while, so be ready
I was pretty much done. I was just going to...
I'm just saying, no one get offended.
I think I'm going to have to go with KOTOR, but it's... for me, I love Mass Effect. But we had the discussion the other day. Lynette and I were talking about BioWare games. And, we both had a lot of difficulty naming the Mass Effect party. But if you talk KOTOR, you can sit back and they just roll off the tongue. Mission and Karth and Zalbar, those guys, the writing was better. The party dynamics were better. Mass Effect was more polished. I liked the way that, I liked the atmosphere of it better. I liked the music. I liked the 70s sci-fi vibe. I'm not a big the world's biggest Star Wars fan anymore. So for KOTOR impressed me sort of despite itself. I was expecting not to like it, or at least to sort of, you know, the way that Star Wars franchise games tend to be hoarded out. You weren't expecting something that was as quality workmanship as it was. I want them to do a game that's as good as KOTOR, but in the Mass Effect universe. I guess that would be my preferred method of both of those things. But just on a straight-up case-by-case comparison, I think KOTOR is probably better. Plus, okay. It was the first really successful console RPG, which is...
Western RPG.
Significant. Yeah, Western RPG.
Okay. Beishi, this is kind of more in theory, since I'm assuming none of us have played any of these games yet, but Band Hero or Lego Rock Band? Let's put it this way. Which one offends you the least?
Lego Rock Band definitely offends me the least. You know, that as Edge Guy has said before on this podcast, there's some good music on Lego Rock Band, surprisingly. I think if I'm going to pretend to be a tween, then I want a plastic minifig head and a plastic minifig wig. Ideally, I would just want to rip more music from either of those games and just put it into a more grown-up version. But, you know, like, I could deal with Rock Band, Lego Rock Band. Band Hero, I don't know. It just conjures too many marching band images to mind.
Hey, what's wrong with marching bands?
AJ.
Lego Rock Band all the way.
Least offensive. Okay.
No, definitely, because, I mean, for one, like I said, the set list in Lego Rock Band, I think, is actually pretty good. Band Hero, the fact, I mean, first of all, every track in Lego Rock Band exportable, Band Hero not the case. And also, I mean, Lego Rock Band is taking advantage of the fact that it's Lego, not just for the aesthetic, but it has a bunch of fun little gameplay modes and things that, I mean, I don't know how they are, but at least they're trying something. Maybe it'll work, maybe it doesn't. I don't know. But, like, I mean, Band Hero, it's just Guitar Hero with poppy music.
I definitely would never have thought when I was growing up back in the early 80s playing with my Lego that in 2009 the prime Lego properties would be video games.
Yeah.
And that is a little strange. But,
All right. AJ, Bonk or Joe and Mac?
Bonk.
Explain yourself.
I mean, Joe Mac was good because it had the co-op element to it. That was a lot of fun. There's just something fun about Bonk and like, you know, the way he was flipping through the air, doing the slow-mo, eating the meat, getting all pissed off and everything. It's just... He had this kind of mystique about him because he was like the mascot for the TurboGrafx-16. Like, it was so kind of removed from everything else, and, like, it made him seem like, just different somehow. I have fond memories of the Bonk games. I like them all, so I'll go with him.
Beige, Bonk, or Joe and Mac?
Okay, to start with, cavemen would never have the names Joe and Mac. They would be called Gronk and Throgdor or something like that. So immediately, I'm predisposed against them. Now, I finished both of them back in the day when they were new. I used to hike my ass up to Hollywood Video on Main Street and pay a quarter for a play of a TurboGrafx-16. Because nobody in my hometown was rich enough to actually own one. The video store made money off of kids selling Bonk credits at a quarter a pop. And I finished Bonk, you know, standing in front of the video counter back in about 1991. And I still have fond memories of that time. So, like Ajgai said, he's a weird, forgotten mascot that... Remember back when you thought it was possible to have three contenders like Sonic, Mario, and Bonk? I was rooting for him. So, you know, if he comes back in a downloadable format, I'll get on board with that. But Joe and Mac, caveman ninjas, they have to either be cavemen or ninjas. You can't have it both ways. Forget it.
Okay, you both lose that one.
I figured as much.
You're both hurting me.
Cavemen are not ninjas, okay? I would take cavemen barbarians, cavemen homewreckers, cavemen, you know, Visigoths. But
which game was the final boss, the heart of a T-Rex?
That was Joe Neck.
Yes, thank you.
That is true.
But there was also a little red demon that floated around in there. It was completely
He was a
surreal.
Devil or something.
Yeah, I forget it. Man, I finished that game at 3 in the morning listening to Depeche Mode in about 19... How do I even remember that? I'm going to be 80 and I'm going to remember that Joe and Mac's final boss was a little red.
Hey, Beige, you want to know something funny? I was 3 when I played Joe and Mac.
I was in grade 11.
Okay.
You weren't 3.
Yes, I was, sir. We moved when I was 4.
It was a Super Nintendo game.
We had a Super Nintendo before we moved. I'm just saying.
You could have been 4 when we moved.
I was 4 when we moved.
Carry on.
Oh, anyways.
This caveman fight. The best caveman game that's ever been made was the Caveman Uglympics for the Commodore 64.
Oh, God. All right, listen.
Hitting your wife over the head was a sport. And dragging her off into the...
Okay, actually, that's pretty sweet.
Let's get away from Joe and Mac. Beige, next question.
Yes.
Rocket Knight or Joe and Mac?
Do you believe that I've never played Rocket Knight?
No, Rocket Knight's kind of obscure, I guess.
That's a Genesis or a Saturn thing?
Genesis Sega? Super Nintendo.
So I'm unfit to comment on this. I'll say
I'll
Joe
tell
and
you
Mac.
What. You're going to like Rocket Knight.
You guys seem very excited that it's coming back, so...
Right. You still have to pick something, though, just for the sake of points and whatnot.
I'll listen to AJ's dissection of it.
No, you have to pick something now. No cheating.
Okay, I picked Joe and Mac because I played it. And because the final boss was a devil heart.
There you go. AJ, Rocket Knight or Joe and Mac?
Rocket Knight. No question. That game was awesome. I mean, it's basically the Rocketeer mixed with, Saturday morning cartoon characters who were animals. It's awesome.
All right, then.
Wait, is this one of those anthropomorphic things like Star Fox where, they had a good thing going on and then they just put animals all over everybody?
No, but it works in this game. I mean, honestly, the character designs would not look out of place from, a mid-early 90s Saturday morning cartoon.
Okay, so more Tailspin, less...
Yeah, more Tailspin, less Star Fox.
Yeah. Okay.
I can deal with Tailspin. I can respect it.
Okay, AJ, talking NES games here. Castlevania or Contra?
Contra. Castlevania, for me, as a kid, was too slow. And I felt like I should have been able to move faster. Like, I was, marching. Like, he was in a marching band. I was like, why isn't he running?
Why are we talking about marching bands so much?
I don't know. Contra was... Also, the great nostalgic moment of Contra for me is when me and my friend Jonathan, just decided to sit down one day and muscle through the game and beat it, and we did it, it took us a few hours to finally get through it, but we did, and it was awesome.
Beige?
Castlevania, no question. Castlevania was the Demon Souls of the mid-80s. I rented Castlevania, for $3 a weekend for about 15 weekends in a row. Looking back on it now, it's hard to see how 6 levels took so long, but it was hard as hell. And it really was the Demon Souls of its time. Like, every time you died, you went back, started again, and maybe got a little farther. But it was, I was pushing the envelope in all sorts of crazy ways. It had amazing sound for the time. Its atmosphere was really cool. I don't know. I used to run up and down the steps in Petrolia doing that weird Belmont walk back and forth. And I actually made a chain whip, too, when I was a kid. Out of a bunch of chain I bought at Pro Hardware and a piece of dowel. It doesn't whip as well as you think it does.
Beige wins this one.
Yeah, I figured.
All right, Beige. Worst omission. StarCraft II's omission of LAN or Modern Warfare II's omission of dedicated servers?
StarCraft II. LAN. I understand why, but... I guess I'm just more attached to the LAN party aesthetic of real-time strategy games. Like, the number of basements I've sat in where buddies have sat down and played StarCraft against one another, or the times when my buddy and I used to play games over the dial-up modem, it just seems nostalgic to me in a way that dedicated servers for Modern Warfare don't. I mean, I couldn't really care less about Modern Warfare. I'll probably buy it, but I'm not, hewing and crying about the fact that they're not supporting dedicated servers for me. I'm in it for the single player, as far as that game's concerned, so I don't, yeah.
AJ. That's my take.
Yeah, I say StarCraft LAN omission as well. I mean, I think I made my point of the dedicated servers clear before. I think it sucks, but it's not that big a deal, ultimately. LAN, like Mark said, I had that nostalgic memory of playing like Warcraft 3 LAN parties with my friends, and well, that may not happen anymore because we're all spread God knows where and we'd have to play online. Like, you know, still just knowing like that's still possible. We could get a bunch of laptops together and play some StarCraft 2 matches.
It doesn't seem wrong that the youth of today would have to play StarCraft isolated in their little, you know, internet connections.
Right? It's just not right.
It's just not right. It's like playing D&D over the phone. It's just not right.
All right, AJ.
Yes.
The terrorist level in Modern Warfare 2, art or distasteful?
It's... My initial impression is they're tending towards distasteful. It's ultimately going to depend on how it builds up to it in the game, how it executes in the game, and how it's resolved in the game. I mean, we're seeing this out of context from a leaked video, and it's clear they didn't want us seeing this video. I haven't actually seen the video, because I've just been trying to avoid spoilers in general. I didn't even know about this until you told me in the car the other day. But just from when you hear that description, you play a level where you're terrorists shooting civilians at an airport. That's kind of pushing it.
What do you think, Beige?
I want to say art.
I'm kind of like AJ
in that I've been keeping myself sort of deliberately blind in regards to this game. But after how they handled Modern Warfare 1, which was, I think, a lot more intelligent than people expected it to be. If you think about it, it's, you know, its opening sequence and the stuff that, like, the spooky sequence, you know, Spectre gunship thing that they did. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. I was a big believer when I heard about 6 Days in Fallujah as a game as well. Not being an American, I have the advantage of not being completely hung up on those sorts of questions. So, it doesn't bother me that somebody might try and make a game about Fallujah, for example, or a game that would have terrorism in it. I just, you know, you hope that you would have the soft touch to be able to do it right. Because, you know, God help you if you make a game that includes a bunch of terrorists shooting up civilians and it's like some sort of horrible caricature of a global conflict. Because there's, you know, there's nothing that'll get the video game industry's name dragged through the mud faster than that. But if they actually managed to do it in some kind of thought-provoking way, and I wouldn't put it past them to do it, then I'm definitely on side. But the only way that we'll know is to wait and see, right?
I'm not feeling it, though.
Here's an analogy I came up with for this, thinking we were going to talk about this at some point this week. Remember the level in Leap Beat Agents where it's the "You're the meaning in my life," whole song, and like, and the whole plot of that story, it's a little girl whose dad dies. I mean, that's a kind of touchy subject for a lot of people, especially if you went through something like that in such a lighthearted game. The thing that made that work in the context of that game was the cutscene leading up to it. It's that moment when Commander Khan, who's usually kind of goofy and with his whole agents are go and everything, he just stoically sits there. That made that whole thing work for me. They need to find their Commander Khan sitting there for this to work in the game.
This is a whole nother level. And it's not just from what if it was just you are playing in an airport level and you see terrorists shooting civilians, okay, maybe. But the fact that apparently you are playing as a terrorist on a sort of killing spree, I don't see the value in that.
Would you watch a movie that was shot from a couple of different perspectives, like Rashomon style, and one of those perspectives was a terrorist?
Have you guys seen, I'm forgetting the name, the movie about the 9/11 plane that crashed in Pennsylvania?
No, I haven't seen it.
A lot of that movie tells a story from the perspective of the terrorist. And, I mean, it doesn't glorify them or anything. It just shows them doing what they're doing. And it's actually really really powerful and really affecting the way it works in that movie. United 93, there it is.
See, I'm just worried. Go ahead. You know, if you're not done.
But, no, I mean, I was just going to say, like, when you see it from that perspective, it's hard to describe. I mean, like I said, it's really emotionally powerful. But, like, to see them laying out these plans, you want to somehow try to stop them, but you can't. And I feel like, in this game, if they're able to do this right, where, like, you could actually feel guilty about what you're doing in the game, that could be interesting.
Here's my question, though. What if I don't want to? What if they say, go do it, I just stand there. I'm like, well, no.
And then you're going to have that problem, too, with the people, and we have friends that are like this, skip every cutscene, just playing the game, want the achievements. They're just boom, 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 skipping the cutscenes. What I got to do, shoot these people? Okay, good. Oh, I wonder if I shoot enough these people, I get an achievement. That's where you're going to have problems.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, assuming that you cannot progress the game unless you go ahead and shoot some civilians, you technically are being rewarded for shooting civilians with progression.
Okay,
the whole thing's dicey.
No. If you can shoot 400 people in the head as Nathan Drake, but balk at doing it from the perspective of a terrorist, then you're a hypocrite.
Explain.
Listen, either video games desensitize us to violence across the board, you know, or we still retain some ability to process things on an intellectual level, right? Either we're all just sort of, you know, shooting stuff is just something you do as an activity because, hey, mechanics are fun and, you know, it's fun to shoot stuff, Grand Theft Auto style. And in that context, why does it matter if you're a terrorist or you're shooting zombies or, you know, you're killing whoever? Like, if it's just about the mechanics, then, you know, it's fine. It's probably no more mechanically different to point a gun at somebody's head as a member of Al-Qaeda than it is to as a member of the U.S. military.
I don't know.
But
if
you're thinking about it from an intellectual level, or you're assuming, okay, we can be saying something despite the fact that people are pointing guns at each other in the game. And, you know, one would hope that eventually the industry gets to the point where the fact that we're pointing guns at each other all the time does tell stories sometimes, then those are perspectives that need to be explored. And they don't have to quantify it, but they have to make you think.
Here's what I worry about, is the average teenage gamer is going to have the mechanical reaction, and the Fox News reporter is going to have the intellectual reaction.
Well, but
the wrong intellectual reaction, where they're just going to condone this, and games are stupid, and we need to ban them, and have government regulation.
Well, right,
and it's
but then
all
you
have
snowball
the again.
Squadron of Shames and the Sean Elliotts of this world looking at it and going, "Well, maybe not."
Yeah, and see, and the thing is, we are going to do that, I'm sure, and Sean Elliott's going to do that, and Guy Kroll's going to do it, and very well spoken gaming journalists are going to do it. Fox News doesn't care what we have to say. If they can piss off Grandma and Aunt Jean, they're going to do it. And they're going to cause an uproar, and then Jack Thompson's going to show up again, and it's going to be Mass Effect, sex box thing, and it's going to be hot coffee.
We're just going to have to defend these people. I'm not worried about defending. I'll defend the medium if I feel it's I need to. I'll defend it for things. I'll defend its right to do what it wants. This particular context of playing as terrorists, shooting civilians, and you want to bring up Grand Theft Auto. I don't defend Grand Theft Auto for that. I'm fucking done with Grand Theft Auto. That's juvenile bullshit. I'm sick of that. So I don't know. We'll see how it's handled.
I think an industry that that includes things like Carmageddon, where cars slide into people and jibs fly and points are got, owes it to itself to explore that side for real in a hopefully a considered way.
Yeah, and that's what we're hoping this is considered. We're hoping it's not.
If it is not, like, there's no point of us judging this until we've played it.
Right.
If we play it and it turns into Manhunt, then there's your answer. But if they could do something like they did with this, remember in the Spectre gunship level in Modern Warfare 1. How weird and detached it was to be shooting presumably terrorists on the ground from 60,000 feet up with high-powered guns. Like, that was strange, and that made you think. And it was a really good implementation of sort of the context of what war has become. So if war has also become a bunch of guys running through an airport murdering civilians, and they can do that in some sort of quasi, I'm not going to say respectful, but at least impactful way, I'm willing to take the chance. I'm grown up enough to be able to accept that possibility.
Well, like I said, we'll see. Anyways, we should move on. Beige, I guess his next question is you too.
Mm-hmm.
Natal, also known as Project Natal. I guess soon it won't be a project anymore and it'll be an actual thing.
It'll just be Natal. Yep.
Yeah.
Or.
But anyways, Natal, next big thing or next big bust?
I'm going to say next big bust. Because the Wii sells a lot of consoles, but I would not say that the Wii's waggle mechanism has developed is a big thing. Despite the fact that the Wii itself is a big thing, it hasn't really done much for gaming. Not in the way that the DS has, I wouldn't say. There's a couple of experiments with it, but, you know, like Mad World. The best you can say about good Wii games is that they don't suck. And that stuff that Super Mario Galaxy and things like that could easily be done without the waggle controls. So until somebody shows me a living example of why non-tactile gesture-based controls are the way to go, I'm just going to believe that it's hype. Now, I could be proven wrong. I'm willing to be proven wrong here. I was proven wrong about the DS, but they'll have to. I think we're going to need to have different genres, different types of experiences that we haven't had before.
AJ.
I'm going to say next big thing.
Jeez.
Here's the thing. I think part of people's negativity towards it, I think Microsoft is doing a terrible job explaining how this device can be used and what it's for. That Target video they showed at E3 with the kid like fighting some ninja dojo, that was stupid. Okay, no one wants to play a racing game by holding their hands out in front of them.
My problem with that project demo was there was a lot with like these super intelligent artificial intelligences that I just don't buy at all.
Yeah, see, and that doesn't even have anything to do with Natal. That's just programming. But like, you know, going on Jimmy Fallon and showing Burnout with this retrofitted on it, that's not what this is going to be used for. I want to see how this is going to subtly affect my traditional controller-controlled games. For example, like a lot of people use head-tracking setups for like PC flight sims and things like that, and they say it's absolutely amazing, where you can actually move your head around your monitor to look at different perspective. This could very easily be used to do that on your 360. I think that'd be great if games start using that. Or you just like look at like, the one thing I did like in that video is how you could just control the 360 interface just by flicking your hand. You don't even need a remote control. That could be cool.
Here's my thing, and this is my problem with the Wii. A control scheme for a video game needs to work 99.99% of the time. Buttons and, like, D-pads and analog sticks can do that. Waggle, these motion control things, they will work maybe 90% of the time, if that. And just having something not work 1 out of 10 times in a video game where things usually depend on the sort of split-second reaction, it's just not acceptable. It just doesn't work. It ruins things.
Well, that's why I wanted to bring the DS analogy back, right? Because the stylus was a genuinely kind of revolutionary thing in the gaming world, and that people started developing types of games for it that had not previously existed. You know, Touch Detective and Elite Beat Agents and, you know, stuff like that, Trauma Center. If what they're talking about with the Natal is that it's kind of the AOL of video gaming, and that it's like, it's video gaming light for people who don't know or are too scared to use video games, then I don't think it's destined to do great things. But if they can go the direction that AJ was saying and use it in ways that are smart, you know, it would be neat. I'd like to see some controller and Natal hybrids. Like, imagine a mech game where most of the time you were using your controller, but if you had to open the cockpit or something, you could just, you know, reach up and flick your hand, something like that. There might be ways to make that work.
Okay. I want to say one more thing, then we'll move on to the next one. Microsoft, they have a tendency to not get fully behind these things.
But they're
the HD DVD drive, XNA, certain, they just don't get behind us at times.
XNA, they're still way going with that.
I don't think they're behind as much as they should be. All right, but let's move on. AJ, last one before the lightning round.
Oh man,
Final Fantasy 13 or Mass Effect 2?
Oh, damn it! I'll say Final Fantasy 13. I mean, I'm very excited for Mass Effect, but let's face it, it is Final Fantasy. They're big deals. That's really all I have to say.
I'm going to say Final Fantasy as well, but mostly just because I want to believe. I want to believe that after Final Fantasy 13 comes out, then we will start to see the renaissance in Japanese-style next-gen RPGs that we haven't seen yet on current-gen consoles. I've got a pretty good, clear idea of what Mass Effect 2 is going to be. It's going to be awesome. But we really need Japan to get a kick in the butt. And hopefully they're all, like everybody says, they're just biding their time, waiting to see what 13 will be. So, you know, a lot of high hopes rest on it.
I will say, just from what I've seen of Final Fantasy 13, I think it does look really good. I'm really excited. But if you're thinking there aren't going to be any of those Japanese-isms in it, like the overexcited characters, the 14-year-old girl in your party, those things will still be there.
But so you know what I worry about,
people,
too?
Don't people want those? I mean, like...
I guess.
It's part
see,
of
no, see, here's my thing. I'm worried that since I've like really gotten into Western RPGs in the last few years, I've kind of realized this, and I'm worried now that I'm going to sit down and seriously play a Final Fantasy for the first time since I've started doing that, that stuff's going to piss me off more than ever. I'm worried about that. I know it's coming, but I'm going to be sitting there playing being like, why do they have to do this shit? Why do they do this?
Do you feel that way about Hideo?
Yeah.
When Johnny goes inside of a can and a drum and poops, do you feel...
Yeah.
Why does Hideo...
I'm sitting there like, yeah, why? Why is the monkey in a diaper?
Like, I mean, you just have to kind of be amused by those things, I think.
Yeah, I'm just
Western RPGs do stupid things, too. They, you know, they look ugly. Blood splatter, I can just say that right now. That's something I would not see
splatter.
In a... No, the blood splatter looks stupid as hell in Dragon Age. I'm going to say that right now.
No, the blood splatter was in Infinite on Discovery, where the character who was designed to appeal to Westerners, his cloak's not red, it's actually white. It's just stained red with the blood of all his fallen foes.
You're talking about Last Remnant or something?
Oh, Last Remnant. That's the one. Yeah.
All right, lightning round.
Here we go.
Five questions.
Yep.
Everyone say their answer as fast as you can. Don't wait for the other person. You are graded on speed here. All right, ready?
Yep.
Yeah.
Joe or Mac?
Joe.
Joe.
Mega Drive or Genesis?
Genesis.
Genesis.
Barbecue or hot sauce?
Barbecue.
Barbecue.
John Adams or Thomas Jefferson?
Thomas Jefferson.
Adams. Shit.
America or Canada?
Canada.
America.
Oh, yeah!
Hey, Beige did pretty good in the lightning round, I have to say. Let's see.
I said John Adams. I was like, shit, Mike clearly likes Tom Jefferson.
If you'd said Thomas Jefferson versus Teddy Roosevelt, then you might have had a good dust up, because that's right. Like Zangief versus Dalsim or something. But
let me add this up. Okay, it's 210 edge guy,
209,
11.
I knew
5 points in the beginning killed you.
That inflection. Fine.
How arbitrary are the points now, Beige?
American judges. It's like the damn Olympics all over again. At least we'll always have that win over the Russians in 67.
All right. Our week in gaming.
Let's do it.
I haven't said anything in a while since I was moderating the last segment. Maybe I'll go first.
Go ahead.
Let's see. I guess we should talk.
Anything?
What? I played Dragon Age, didn't I?
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, aside from that, I think that's the big one for all three of us.
Well, not for me. My experience with Dragon Age started last night, and it was interesting because I wouldn't say that I had a fight with my wife over it, but an interesting discussion point came up where I was busy creating my, my swords and sword and board fighter like I always do. And she said to me, you're not going to create that same fighter that you always do with the shield and the, you know, human background. I'm like, yeah, why? I like playing that guy. And she said, we just sat through The Witcher for 40 hours. And, okay, we can be an elf. Let's be an elf. Or let's be a dwarf, Let's be a mage. Let's be something. And so I ended up sitting in front of the character creator, fussing with it like I did with Mass Effect for 45 minutes. And ultimately was not ever able to make up my mind about what I wanted to play, and I got into such an existential tailspin over it that I just closed down Dragon Age and went away. So, that's it. Like, I started, I don't know, when you guys play RPGs, do you come up with a character, an interesting character, or do you play yourself?
I always say I'm going to do something different, and then as soon as I start playing the game, the first, actual dialogue choice comes up where, that factors in, I'm like, fuck. And I just end up being me. I always say the second playthrough, yeah, I'll go out of character. I always got to do that first playthrough as me. I always do.
I started entertaining the idea of maybe playing a female character or playing like a dwarf or something, and then it just, I started trying to think of like, okay, so, I don't know, I guess I just have difficulty relating. I'm still burned on the, well, fortunately I got the good end of this, but Lynette and I both played through Baldur's Gate 2 at the same time, and which had Jahira, who I have a soft spot for, and the girls got stuck with this completely whiny bitch of a romantic interest that nobody I ever met enjoyed, and it was just such a disappointing run for BioWare that every time I consider playing off-gender now, I think about that, and I'm like, do I really want to be playing Twilight from the other perspective? Not really. I think I'll be this guy instead. So what I really want to know is who is playing different backgrounds, and are they enjoying them, and are they different? Like, is it worth my time?
I went with the sword and board male human.
How's it going?
I love it. So, like, if humans all come from the same nobility background, there's like the six different origins, and all humans get the same one. But I really like the origin. I thought it was very cool.
Isn't it different if you play a mage? I thought that there was
that's true. Mages are their own thing. But I did the human. Mike, you were the city elf.
I did the city elf just because it was. You told me that elves in this game were like recently freed slaves of humans and stuff, and I thought that was interesting to me because that's a twist. When I first heard about Dragon Age, I was just very worried that this was going to be too standard of a sort of fantasy setting, and I'm disappointed that the dwarves are just dwarves and they live under mountains and they mine and shit. But the idea of an elf who like is kind of a second rate citizen, that was really interesting to me. So I went elf, and I had to resist the urge to just be a warrior. I'm like, no, I won't do that. I'll have a bow and arrow like an elf should and stuff like that. See, but what are you saying for? Like, I don't necessarily play as myself. I do try to play something like that's a little cooler. Not cooler, but, you know, something a bit more, you know, let's be honest. If I was living in these places, I would be like running a stable
running in terror from the undead, yeah.
I think we all would. I'm not joining the Grey Wardens. Look, you know.
But it was cool, though, like, because I watched the entirety of you play through your origin story, and I did mine, and, I mean, they're really different. Mm-hmm. They all get you to the same place to the point where you become a Grey Warden, but the beginning is radically different. And it does affect, at least for me, it does affect little things here and there in the main plot. Like, your origin does keep coming up every so often. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, I was giving the game shit. I wasn't looking forward to it. But I am enjoying it. It's better than I thought it would be. It's appealing to me more than I was giving credit. I will say, it's still an ugly game to me. It still doesn't look particularly good. Maybe it looks better on the PC graphically, but even still, I find that whole very sort of kind of Dungeons & Dragons art style to be sort of bland.
See, I think I just really like it. Because every game that comes out like that, I just really enjoy.
Okay.
I guess I just like it.
But still, it's not... What I like about it, at least so far, is that everything is... You know, it's Western RPGs, they're big by their nature, but sometimes they can be little, not so much that they're too big, but they're just not very,
They're not very streamlined, it's not very user-friendly.
They're not. Like, when I tried to play Icewind Dale 2 not too long ago, like, almost as soon as I got into that thing, I was in some giant town, and I just from walking around, because, you know, I think, well, I'm in a town, I better go talk to everyone. By the time I was done, I had 50 quests.
Yep.
And, like, I just don't, like, I'm like, what, where the hell am I even going to start? So, you know, this game, it's not quite that, it's a bit more focused. So I'm enjoying that so much. And it's still very much a sort of D&D and fair, you know, you have your spells and whatnot. But it seems to control rather well. You have this nice sort of reticule for targeting when you hold down the left trigger. So I've been surprised so far. I've been enjoying it.
Yeah, I am.
I don't want to say much about the plot or anything.
Yeah, please don't spoil anything.
It's really good. It's really well written.
Yeah, it actually has been. It's been written pretty well. It's been voice acted pretty well.
Does your main character speak?
No, honestly,
this is like medieval KOTOR to me. It really is. Okay. The way it plays.
You know, like I was choosing my voice palettes, right? And there's like six options where it's like, Ha! And you're like,
yeah. It's just like Baldur's Gate.
doesn't really sound like anything. And I was thinking about, you know, Captain Shepard. At least he was a guy. You knew what he sounded like. You liked his reactions to stuff.
Yeah, this is more like KOTOR than Mass Effect, really.
Mm.
And it's more like Baldur's Gate, I would say.
Well, yeah, well, sure. The PC version, I guess, does like the overhead isometric view and the hot bar. But like on the 360, it's just the over-the-shoulder KOTOR view with the kind of radial menu of Mass Effect for like all your skills.
See,
and I think it works really well.
I kind of like that. I don't know if I feel like if it went back to all of a sudden being that kind of over the head and that, you know, the bars and everything, I feel like I would suddenly kind of be back in my fearful place where it looks like a Baldur's Gate game and I'm terrified again.
It's because there's too much information on the screen at
once. It does scare me. Like, yeah. And even you said, like, when you get a mage, they have so many abilities at first, you don't even know what the hell to do with them for me. But, you know, I'm doing okay with it. There's still the conventions or the drama that sometimes I'm not crazy for. I don't know why there has to be so much junk loot in these games. I know, but I wish you could just pick up more money from monsters instead of this crap that you have to sell that has no other purpose.
Yeah, don't play The Witcher then.
Yeah, I can imagine. But you know, besides from some, you know, the typical Western RPG things that I'm not always fond of, it seems pretty good so far. I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I was just gonna, today I hit level enough to use the Mass Effect 2 armor that came with the game for free. I equipped that. It's pretty sweet.
Running around with Spectre armor in medieval times?
No, it's
kind of like that. I mean, the Halo armor and Fable.
No, I mean,
it was
kind of
like Halo
armor,
but they kind of made it look more Fable-y.
No, it just looks like armor. I don't know what it's going to look like in Mass Effect, honestly.
Okay.
But I did get the DLC quest, the Warden's Keep, because I had the points. I was like, oh, whatever.
That was a funny Penny Arcade comic.
Yeah, it was. And that's what happens in the game. That is kind of cheesy. How there's like literally a guy, he's like, he gives you the quest pitch, and then your dialogue choices, you know how they'll put like persuade or intimidate in front of these things? It says, downloadable content. Let me get back to you on that. And if you click it, it'll ask you if you want to save your game and exit out to the store to download it.
See, that almost sounds kind of amusing to me.
Yeah.
Here's,
it's kind of funny in a way. But yeah, in a way, it's terrible.
My feelings on that are extremely negative. I mean, and I know they did this deliberately, right? I'm the kind of guy that would not ever pay for horse armor, or for the Zodiac Spear, or for
See,
any other
AJ is the guy who would pay for that.
Shit like that.
AJ bought horse armor!
I know.
AJ, he's the guy! AJ is the guy.
Listen to me. I bought the DLC. I paid money for it, because there was a character, and some writing, and some backstory, and that bugged me. It bugged me that they bundled in the loot horror aspect of DLC with the story aspect of it, where it was like, and for these people, we have this element that you will pay $15, but for these people, we have this element. And I feel ripped off. I don't think story should be, or characters. Like, imagine if they didn't put HK-47 in KOTOR until you paid $15.
Like, well, you know, you didn't have to pay $15.
I know. This is
you started telling me the story, but my Skype on that PSP cut out. So
basically,
tell us what happened.
I went to Steam. I saw the Pimp Edition there. I bought it. You know, I didn't have a pre-order code. I just bought it. In 15 years, I'm not going to care that I spent $15 on it. But I am, like, I'm disturbed. I'm disturbed about the precedent that sets. Because if it turns out that suddenly the industry figures out that 75% of people will pay for another character, guess what we're going to see in every RPG? Right?
Yeah, you guys shouldn't be buying this stuff. You're setting bad examples.
Well, no, the ward, like I said, the Wardens, or the Stone Prisoner, rather. I mean, that's kind of like the Gears of War classic map pack thing that they did with Gears of War 2. It's to promote buying new and not used.
I feel like... I wonder sometimes... If this battle against piracy and used games, it's not worth it. Almost it seems because it seems like we're punishing a lot of normal consumers, and like the product is being hurt at this point.
But see, I bought it on Steam. There's no piracy on Steam. They didn't have to worry about me buying it used because they got my money up front before they even gave me the game. You can give me a golem for that. Like, seriously.
Maybe you should email customer support and tell them you didn't know. Maybe they'll give you your money back.
They won't. They'll say, this is a clever marketing strategy that we are seeing great dividends with.
Yeah.
Expected in Mass Effect 2.
By the way, I am looking at a picture of the Blood Dragon armor as it appears in both Dragon Age and Mass Effect, and it's pretty badass in both.
I don't even care about the Blood Dragon armor. I just wanted
to... I do. AJ it's does. Sweet. It's so good.
Wait till you're at the end of Heavy Rain, and they ask you for $5 to find out who the killer is.
You know,
this game doesn't do that. No game does that. Game does that. See, don't confuse this.
No.
This game does not say... you have to pay $5 to play the last quest. It doesn't do that.
No, but it does say you may have to pay $5 or you don't get this cool guy in your party who has voice acting and recorded dialogue and writing time invested in and all the other stuff we like NPCs for.
That's pretty lame.
But again, he's technically free. You're not paying for him. I mean, you did. I'm sorry. But
well, yeah, I got a soundtrack.
I don't. How am I going to get him? I'm playing your copy on my Xbox. I can't get him.
Supposed to buy him, like.
Well, see, what the hell? See, I can't. You're saying that everyone's going to get for free. Here, two people who can't.
Maybe Beige will give you his code.
Yeah, maybe. All right, but okay. I think it's amusing how little the DLC argument has progressed from the original horse armor debate.
Our company still screwing consumers any way they can. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not saying it shouldn't. I don't know. I still don't know what to think of it.
Well, here's what you'd have to do. You'd have to find somebody who played the game without the DLC, without even knowing about the DLC. And then you would have to ask them when they were done, do you feel like anything was missing? See, if they say no,
okay.
What's the problem?
Now, clearly no one's going to play through Dragon Age as a 40-hour game or whatever. Which, by the way, I'm always so sick of reviews exaggerating the length of these goddamn games. Anyways, but it's sure they're not going to complain. But I still don't like it. I still don't like it. Anyways, let's move on. I got the demo for Torchlight, which is like that Diablo game, you know? Mm-hmm. And boy, is this game like Diablo. I mean, it is a lot like Diablo.
But that
and
could be a good thing.
It is good. But I mean, even like the music. Like, I wonder if the music is just from Diablo 2 sometimes.
Has Matt Ulin on the guitar?
Yes, exactly. It's like that
guitar
style. Yeah. Yes, exactly. It's like classical guitar. But, you know, it's cool because it's like that. You know, you're in that town. You get some quests. You go into the dungeon and, you know, you're going to have to use identify scrolls, stuff, scroll of identity and town portals and all that stuff. But, you know, it's a lot of fun. There are some neat things to it. Like, you have this dog companion with you. If you feed the dog certain fishes, it changes into different monsters or creatures, you know. Essentially, you know, it's like, hey, you like Diablo, here's basically a new Diablo game. So, and for $20 too. The demo was pretty long. I didn't even beat the demo. It was just kind of a point where, okay, I'll stop playing for now because I'm getting pretty far into this. I don't want to basically lose this progress. But, you know, I wonder how long it is. I wonder if there's more than that one starting town you're in. Sometimes I wonder if there isn't because I think that town is called Torchlight, so, you know. But it seemed cool. I beat Ratchet and Clank, A Crack in Time.
Yeah, good. I haven't started it yet.
I had not really played. I played some of the Ratchet and Clanks, like I've rented them before. I never got very far in any of them. I really enjoyed this game, though. I thought it was...
Our household is a Ratchet and Clank household, so we're very much looking forward to it.
But, like I said, I can't speak to it in terms of like how it compares to the other games. And I guess, like, a lot of people, like, it seems like a lot of reviews, the biggest complaint in the game is just that Ratchet Clank is getting a little old or a little tired for them. But, you know, I don't have any of that. So for me, the whole thing was just pretty fantastic. I really liked all those Clank levels with the sort of time puzzles. I wish there was more of those, really. Like, in the demo you play, you get about, like, a fourth or a third of all of the puzzles that are in the game for that. But I thought the ending was pretty well put together, pretty dramatic. I was very pleased with it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Does it have a bouncer?
A bouncer?
It does not.
What's a bouncer?
The bouncer is the best weapon in Ratchet & Clank universe.
There's a few I haven't unlocked yet. Maybe
it was definitely missing from the last Ratchet & Clank game. So a bouncer is a weapon that lobs a gigantic ball mine thing. And then when that ball hits the ground, it splits into a bunch of smaller balls about half its size. And when those bounce and hit the ground, they split into other balls half their size until the screen is just full of millions of high-bouncing balls that all explode at the same time.
That's pretty cool.
It's fantastic. And the more you level it up,
the bigger the initial ball that falls out of the gun is, until, like, literally, in some of the Ratchet and Clank games, when you level the heavy bouncer up enough, this gigantic, like, beach ball-sized mine just sort of flops out of the barrel of the gun. It's so fat and heavy with other balls inside of it, it can't even sail 5 feet. But you can point it at something and fill the screen with a million tiny bouncing bombs in about 1 second. And I always thought that if the PS3 was good for anything, what it should be good for is filling the screen with about 5,000 bouncers at the same time.
There was nothing like that.
That's a shame.
Actually, for like the first half of the game, the only weapon I really used was the pistol, and I kind of felt bad. After I got that leveled up, I started using some of the other weapons a bit
more. You gotta use, what's his name, the little guy who flies around you.
Oh, I used him all the time, Mr. Zircon. Yeah. He's great.
Yeah. That's it, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much all I did was I would equip Mr. Zircon, and I would have my pistol, and that would be all I did. But I went off a little bit more. But see, I don't know if any of the weapons were quite as cool as what Bay said there. There was one where he threw like this thing and a portal opened up and like a tentacle monster would kind of like come out of the portal and attack people. That was kind of cool.
Now, was it called the Watchman?
I forget.
That'd be sweet.
The bouncer worked because it had the same feel as dumping a bucket full of golf balls off of a high rise. So if you like that experience, except that the golf balls explode when they hit the ground and they bounce a few times, then that weapon is fun for you.
That does sound fun. I saw Chris, my younger brother, play a little bit Left 4 Dead 2 demo, which doesn't count.
You're going to talk about that?
I don't know. I just want to say what he said. He said, I thought that there would be more to this. And I just sort of... First off, what is the big deal about... Is there something to the melee weapons I don't understand? Why is this a touted feature that you have?
Because there weren't melee weapons before, and you could, like, dismember zombies with an axe.
But that's... I don't understand why that... So you can have a bat, and you can push the R trigger to swing a bat.
It goes back to the roots of zombie conventions, in which smashing a zombie's head in with an axe is a necessary part of the oeuvre.
You know, I'm going to say two things here, which may not... really give me a whole lot of love from people. I don't think I actually like Left 4 Dead that much, really. Second off, I don't think I like zombies that much in anything.
I feel like zombies are getting a little played out.
No, even before, I never liked zombies. I'm sorry, Beige. I've seen a picture of you dressed up as a zombie, so I know you're a zombie
fan. It doesn't mean that I'm thrilled with them. You should read an article I read a little while ago called Vampires Are From Venus, Zombies Are From Mars or something, which is about... why zombies appeal to teenage boys and vampires appeal to teenage girls. If you're not all hot on zombies, it probably just means you're a little more together than the average 15-year-old.
Oh, that's good to know.
So feel good.
I never liked very many horror things, though. Isn't that right, AJ?
No, we never have, any of us.
No. We liked Disney throughout our entire life. We never progressed to that stage.
My wife doesn't like zombies either. She says that they're like a natural disaster more than they are a monster, and she's probably right.
Yeah.
Zombie movies are always about the survivors, and the zombies themselves are pretty boring.
Right.
You know.
I still don't see why this sequel had to be. It still really does look just like so much of the same. I can't imagine
what it had to be.
Yeah, but like
Valve
I said, it's
likes
it's
money and everybody.
But like I said, it's not like. It's not like, I don't understand like what you're saying.
I don't
it's
understand
not like,
why it's okay when Valve does this for you.
They're not, Michael, this is not them taking Street Fighter, adding 8 more characters, and re-releasing it for $40. This is not Madden where the roster gets updated.
It sounds exactly like Madden. That's what it exactly sounds like. It sounds like
Mike,
they have a new roster, and some new
We have
levels.
A new roster with a new... with. Listen,
because
listen,
these levels
no,
are
shut
different.
Up, shut
listen,
up,
listen,
shut
listen,
up, shut
listen,
up,
listen
to me. No,
listen,
shut
no.
up.
Wait, listen, shh. Just because these levels are different doesn't mean they're different. He's running around, zombies are jumping over fences, and he shoots them. It's the
oh, yeah,
exact
you know what,
same
you know what,
shit.
You're right. No, yeah, Super Mario World was a huge ripoff. It was just different levels. You had Yoshi's big deal.
No. I guess at least it had a graphical improvement.
Who said this one doesn't? It looks better.
No, I say it doesn't. I do. Out there. We have a phrase in wrestling for this. Same old shit.
How is making a sequel to a game with new levels and new characters
because there's
and
four
new
levels.
Enemies and new game types and new playable
new
characters? How is that
stop with
a
this new character shit. Like, the no, Leopard I mean, Dead like, characters. Like,
it's
not
the exact
them,
same
not,
thing.
Shut
they don't
up,
play
listen,
any differently. Not, they use submachine guns when they fight zombies.
Hey, I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the special infected. All right, there's like
point
two or three new
Mike,
types of special
but,
infected.
Zoe, Francis, Bill, and Lewis are some of the most often, like, cosplayed and referenced characters.
Thank you.
And I don't get that.
Thank you.
I gotta be honest, I don't get it.
Do you like
you didn't
the,
like the
do
game!
Because
just because they have some banter between themselves, suddenly they're great characters.
Do you consider the Team Fortress guys to be characters? In the modern sense? Even though they have no identities apart
no,
from...
No! Most of their... Look, no, listen to this. I won't say that. Most of their funny bits, a lot of that comes from... Like, the cartoon shorts they come from. That's where their personality comes
That's
from.
That's okay!
No, it's not!
It's supplemental material!
And you know what? There's no Team Fortress. You know, Team Fortress 2, here's my problem. Here's my beef. I had to wait 10 fucking years for Team Fortress 2. Okay? Okay?
So you're just jealous.
And episode, well, I don't even know where episode 3 is. It's canceled as far as I'm concerned. That game's not coming out. But, 1 year later, here's Left 4 fucking Dead 2. And I'm like,
so that's just it. You're just jealous. That's it.
I'm jealous, and I don't get it. I don't get it. I just don't understand why all of a sudden Valve changed their philosophy for the one game of theirs I like the least. I don't understand why they made Half-Life 2 and were like, Half-Life 2 is pretty good. We'll make like episodes or some shit. We'll release them. We'll release three of them over the next 10 years. Then they made Left 4 Dead like. Fuck, man. Let's get on Left 4 Dead 2 right now. It's got to come out next year.
Here's the thing. Plotting and pacing and scripting is hard. Populating environments full of programmatically generated monsters is easy. It's the Cliffy
right.
Bear argument.
Because there's not that much to Left 4 Dead, so it's easy to make Left 4 Dead 2, because there's not much to it.
Yes.
Yeah?
I'll give you that the characters are... The thing is, PC players have been playing Cypher so long, they've forgotten what characters are. You know, I like Left 4 Dead. And I like the four of them. They're iconic, but, you know, I'm sort of with Mike on this, that they're not Geralt of Rivia. They're those.
Well, I know.
They're
I'm not
guys.
Saying they need to, but, I mean, okay, I'm
but
talking
to you can't
to
tell
Beige
me
the features
well,
shut up,
new
I'm
characters.
Not talking to you. I'm talking to Beige. Do you think a game that has five completely brand new scenarios, not levels even, scenarios, with two new enemy infected types that can be played as in multiplayer, with two new online multiplayer modes, new weapons, all of that. Do you think that's a ripoff?
No, I don't know. I'm not within Mike's crazy land. I bought Devil May Cry 3, and it was Devil May Cry with other stuff on it. You know, maybe not Final Fantasy, but take your pick of most other JRPG franchises.
Yeah, you know what, Mike? You played Kingdom Hearts DS. Which was
I totally criticized it for reusing assets.
But you played it.
I criticized it. I totally criticized Kingdom Hearts DS. I specifically said it was not a great game.
Okay.
So, the thing that I think
this game doesn't do that. That's what I'm saying.
For me,
in a year, they made
Left
all new
Dead,
content.
The thing that puts Left 4 Dead in the canon is that for whatever reason, Zoe, Francis, Lewis, and Bill have been adopted by the gaming community as icons. You know, do they deserve it? Who knows? But they're there now. They're part of our culture. So if that team is going to be important to us, then yeah, they count.
Well, they may not be for much longer now that we have four new guys already.
We'll see. I'm not a huge Left 4 Dead fan either, but you know, I'm not a Madden fan either, but I can respect what it does. If shooting zombies is your thing, then nobody shoots zombies better than Left 4 Dead.
I just don't see
why. Mike.
What?
You know, let's move on, and I'll bring up something that's going to make you happy.
I don't know. I feel like I'm not done here just because I can't convince you guys why I'm right, but it seems like that's not happening.
I understand your argument, but I do
You said
not.
I lived in crazy land. You do not understand.
Here, Mike.
Your prejudice against Left 4 Dead is extreme.
Prejudice. All right.
Here, you know what's going to cheer you up, Michael?
What?
I played an iPhone game this week.
God, fuck. No, you're not allowed to.
No, this is a real one.
No,
it's Eliminate
Pro. There aren't any real ones. None of them.
You know what's great? I could just keep talking right now, and in post-production, I could just mute you, and no one would know.
Fine,
so
go ahead.
For it. Okay.
That, no, because that would require some extra editing on your part,
okay,
which you would
so
never do.
Eliminate on the iPhone. It's NG Moco's attempt at doing like an online first-person shooter. At first when I started playing it, I didn't like it. I just thought it didn't work. But as you start to kind of get used to the way it plays, it's actually not that bad. It uses like virtual twin sticks. You have to kind of do this kind of awkward double tap on the screen to start shooting. But again, you get the hang of it.
Maybe the sequel they release next year will be better with new characters and new levels.
The way it kind of works to get your money, it's a free download. You have to buy energy. You can play it as much as you want, but only as long as you have energy are you able to earn credits. You can buy new weapons and armor and stuff. It recharges automatically every like 4 hours, I think. And a full bar of energy will get you through about 3 rounds. So you don't have to pay. But if you wanted to like sit down and play for 3 hours, you'd be paying, but I don't see why you would. But it's free. You can play it and, you know, as much as you want. So I suggest at least checking it out.
All right. You didn't play anything else, did you? I mean, you played Borderlands, but we talked about that already, right?
Yeah.
I got to play Borderlands. Yeah. So you're done,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, just a bunch of Dragon Age. Yep.
Beige, what's up with you?
I played a bunch of weird stuff. I made an observation recently that the last three games I've purchased at retail have all been PS3 exclusives. Figure that
Ratchet,
out.
Wait, I can figure it out. Ratchet & Clank, Uncharted, and Demon's Souls.
Yep. I just meant that we're living in Bizarro World. And if you throw...
I want to say, PS3 is kind of coming into its own this holiday season.
Yeah, I feel like it is too, actually.
And, you know, I know, like, even stupid things like the sort of brand reinvention. Like, I feel like that shouldn't have an effect, but it kind of does. Just the fact
those commercials help.
Right, just the fact that it's not that stupid PlayStation 3 logo with the Spider-Man font, all these good games. I don't know. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, Noel, I'm pulling for it, definitely. I've always wanted to see the PS3 take its place as the, like, neck and neck with Xbox badass rivals. And, you know, it's good to see. I played Trine on the PSN, so there was another good... Not technically a PS3 exclusive, I guess, but I think that the way that I played it with the controller in my hand, it certainly worked well. Have you guys already talked about Trine on the show?
I played the Trine
PC
demo.
Yeah, we played the PC demo when it came out.
It didn't come together for me as well as I was hoping.
Yeah.
I call it an 8. You know, it's like a solid, unremarkable, but well-crafted game.
Maybe a 7.
Has a good soundtrack. It's not quite The Lost Vikings, but it's amusing. I don't really want to talk about it, just that I finished it and it was good. It took me about 2 play sessions to do it. I'd say it's worth the price. It's cheaper on PSN than it is on the PC, so it won't set you back quite as much. I've been playing a lot. As I said, I finished The Witcher. I think everybody who is a PC gamer should play it and finish it. Witcher had extremely good... just so many good little touches and a really, really satisfying ending. Really, they kept you guessing and speculating, and they kept rolling out the plot right up until the very, very end. Even with twists and all that stuff, it's really well done. So, but I've talked about The Witcher before. Just that I think it's great, and I can't wait to play the sequel. It just made me think about how much untapped material there is out there in the literary world that they could convert to games. Because I'm sure that the reason why The Witcher is good is because it has this giant back canon of, like, actual books with real characters and stuff that they're ripping off to craft the plots and things for it. And I did appreciate the fact that the entire game took place basically in one city and, like, the outlying towns to it. I think more games should do that.
Yeah, I always wonder why, like, RPGs, in an effort to feel big, feel like they have to take place over an entire world. When you think about, like, one city and the towns around that should be big enough for a
Witcher,
game space.
Oh, yeah, Witcher, right? The city of Vizima, there's this little town that's outside of Vizima, and there's the countryside. That's it. And
or even, like, Fallout 3, it's just Washington, D.C. It's like half of, like, it's a part of Washington, D.C., and it feels huge. It feels bigger than... You know, in Final Fantasy XII, when you're supposedly going over the entire world or anything like that.
Yeah, it's...
Even like KOTOR, like when you're going from all these planets.
Right.
You know, every planet is just like this one little town.
I think the thing is that it's hard to plot and pace and write a game in which you do go to the desert world and the jungle world and the water world. And, like, it's easier to write a cohesive plot for something that's small scale, like The Witcher. You know, there's a heavy plot in that about the
the politics of the country and the king, and it's just cool. Like, it's not done enough. Like, but I don't want to talk about The Witcher. I want to talk about Demon Souls.
Oh, so you tell me about that.
Did you play it on Halloween?
Yes. Oh, yeah. And not only did I play it on Halloween, but I started it on Halloween.
Oh, God.
You know, I'd been keeping myself in the dark about Demon Souls. I knew enough to know that it was good, and that I probably wanted to play it, but I didn't have a grasp exactly of what it was. Just that they were doing really odd things with multiplayer, and it represented a really departure from a lot of conventions. So, yeah, I picked it up, put it in on Halloween. That was a mistake. I mean, like, I knew that it was going to be ugly. I'd heard that through the grapevine, that it was going to be punishing. But here's the thing about Demon's Souls. It is a punishing game in the daylight hours. It is a ruthless, filthy, nasty slog of a game in the light hours. And then when you plug it in on Halloween, they just grab the difficulty slider and they slam it as hard as they can into the dead zone. So I showed up and, like, I don't know, man. It was just nasty. Now, so the way that Demon's Souls worlds work, like, how much do you guys know about it?
I did a lot of research into it after everyone, like, started going on about how it's, like, the best game ever. And it's like, oh, I've never even heard of it.
Really hard to describe.
Yeah.
How do I describe it? I had a good analogy earlier. It reminds me a lot of 8-bit era games, I guess, in its composition, in its sort of philosophy.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people say it's very much a modern take on a roguelike.
It is. Yeah, Rogue is a good comparison, right? You know, Contra, I might also say. You need to ask yourself up front, if you're playing Demon's Souls, whether you're the kind of gamer who is okay with playing, say, let's say you're playing Contra 4, and let's say you've spent 45 minutes, you know, you've used all your continues and you've managed to make it up to level 6 or something. You're not quite at the end, you're fighting, you've done your best, but the final boss or the boss of that level kills you, and you turn around and you realize, I've just lost 45 minutes of play. I lost my final continue, the game has reset, I'm done, right? If that makes you angry, if that frustrates you, if you're like, but I played for 45 minutes, I should get some sort of reward, then Demon's Souls is not for you.
Because that's why I've been so on the fence about this game because of that. I don't know how I'd react to it.
All right. So I remember the game I was going to compare it to. And this is the completely apt comparison here. Totally apt. You know how when George gets on the podcast and he starts raving about Eve?
Uh-huh,
and how he loves the sensation that when you are flying around in your spaceship in Eve and you suddenly accidentally hyper jump 5 parsecs over into the middle of a firefight and you can't get out for 5 minutes and you're stuck there knowing that if they manage to blow your ship up, you just lost the last month of gameplay, and how the sweat forms on your hands and how you get all twitchy about it. And then when you finally punch the escape button, it's the best feeling in the world to leap out of there with your shields intact. If that appeals to you, then Demon's Souls is the game you want to play, because that's all that it is. I'm a sucker for masochistic punishment in my games, so I immediately am predisposed towards Demon's Souls. But it's hard. It's very hard to downshift into that frame of mind. So you start the game, right? This is how they start you. There's this country. It's overrun by, you know, a mysterious fog that is full of demons and such. Your character is one of these warriors who's come to the fog to defeat the demons, and you walk into the game's tutorial. Basically, you take 5 or 6 steps, kill a couple of enemies, turn a corner, and you're face-to-face with a gigantic boss. And in most games, this is where you would, you know, kill the boss and it would be epic. But in Demon's Souls, the boss kills you really fast, because you're level 1, and he's a gigantic boss. And you can, you know, like, it's not technically impossible to beat it. He's just really, really strong, and you don't know what the hell you're doing. And so the boss kills you, and the next thing you know, you're waking up as a ghost in the Nexus. And the you know, goth chick that runs the place looks over and is like, oh, it's human, you know, it's soul number 500,691. Yeah, guess you're not the hero of, you know, the countryside. Oh, well, you're just a statistic. Bye. And then as you're picking yourself up off the ground, you see the ghostly body of the next guy online, who was actually some guy on the PSN, who just happened to be the next guy the boss killed after you, picking itself up off the floor and dusting itself off as you're walking around getting your bearings. So this sense of other players doing stuff around you is constant. It's like you will see them, you can see the ghosts of other players in the game as you play. You can't touch them exactly, not right away anyway, and you can't interact with them, but you can see them. So when you're in this, and the atmosphere of the game is really good. It's Shadow of the Colossus-y. It's very sparse. The music is very lightly used, and the game is very like cavernous and just empty. It has that empty Shadow of the Colossus feeling to everything, which is appropriate for what they're doing. And it's full of ghosts. Like, that's the only way to describe it. Other players. You're walking along, and you'll see... Either you'll see the spirits of other players kind of fading out, in and out, as they pass you on their way to do something, or falling off a cliff or dying, or you'll see their bloodstains on the ground, and you can touch one of these bloodstains to see how that character died. And this is a game that will kill you ruthlessly all the time, if you're not very, very careful and on the edge of your seat. So here's a concrete example, right? On the first level... after you've killed your first couple of bad guys, there's an archway that leads into a darkened room, like a hallway. And there's a bloodstain. There was a bloodstain for me out in front of the door. And so I clicked on it, and it was a message. And it said, beware the enemy ambush. And it had like 400 thumbs up. Because you can thumb up, thumbs down other people's messages the way that you can, like, you know, rate...
that's cool.
Amazon request. And so I was like, beware the enemy ambush. This has a lot of thumbs up as I walk through the door. And as I walk through the door, the creature that was hiding behind the door with a giant axe smashed it into the side of my head and killed me instantly. And my body fell into the... And I was like, oh, that ambush! And then I realized I had lost 20 minutes of play and all of my souls.
And all my souls.
So the way that it works, yeah, so you kill monsters and you get souls, you get orbs. You know, it's kind of God of War, right? Souls are the universal currency of video game powering up. But so if you die, your body drops to the ground, and all the souls you were carrying sit there in a big pile that only you can get. But the catch is, you have to make it back to your body in one go to reclaim them. And if you can do that, you just pick up your souls, nothing is lost, continue on. But it is not as easy as it sounds, because the level resets every time you die. So if you've gotten really far into the level...
Yes, like, it's not just a corpse run.
It's not just a corpse run. You have to be as good to get back there. And one thing I will say about Demon's Souls, the fighting is really good. The fighting is really interesting. The way that they've done weapon combat, it's hard to describe on a podcast, but every weapon feels really, really different, and the way that you use them is really different. It's not just, you know, axes swing a little slower but do more damage. They've really considered how using weapons would actually work in the real world. So if you're in a hallway, let's say you're in a 5x5 hallway, it doesn't matter that your pole arm is like the polearm of Whoopass, or your broadsword is the broadsword of Whoopass, you can't swing it because you're in a 5x5 hallway and you can't use a sword like that. And monsters will gang up on you, and they know that. So you have to sort of really plan your loadout for things like, okay, I need a dagger in case I get jumped in, you know, fast guys who surround me, but I need, you know, it's really good to have a spear because the reach is good on guys with long arms. You really start thinking about your character, and when you level up, you can buy stats for your character. But every time you buy a stat, it becomes more and more and more expensive to customize your character. So very quickly, you have to sort of decide, all right, I'm going to, this is my concept for my guy. I'm building to this concept. And there's a gallery, you know, there's all these really cool online weird tips of the hat that they've done. And if you get up to the very, very top of the main temple that you start in, they have something that's called the Pantheon. And you can walk around and see all of the other characters that people have created and just see the sort of variance in what it is that people have done with their characters and see the guys who have chosen to be like, okay, I'm just specializing in like bows. Bows are what I'm going to do. And there up on the pedestal is some statue of, you know, dude from Japan who's got 999,000 kills and he's the best bow archer in the world. Right next to him will be some guy who just uses daggers. And the other neat thing about it is that every now and then other players, it's like a single player experience where occasionally other players will leap in and grief you or do something horrible. So if you're killed, your body turns into a ghost. And ghosts suck. They have about half the hit points of a mortal body. They're really weak. And when you are a ghost, the one thing you want to do more than anything else is get your body back. But you can't, because it's not easy to do. You either have to beat a boss, or you have to leap into another player's game and kill them. And if you can do that, you get your body back. But if they kill you, then they get a whole bunch of bonuses and stuff. So every now and then you'll just be walking along, trying to fight some demons to get their souls. And out of the darkness, a crazy other player will leap at you, you know, swinging a sword and saying, I need to, don't, it's nothing personal, but you have to die now because I need my body back. And there are stats for people who have fended off these other desperate players. And by the same sort of token, you can use, you can use orbs to, like, throw up the bat signal and call for help so that other players who are playing online might jump into your game and give you a hand with the boss or something. Really, it's just very difficult to explain, but it's really cool. It's very roguelike, and it has, because of its mechanism of high rewards but huge losses, like the tension of it is really, really high. So the boss fights that I have had in Demon's Souls so far have been some of the most tense, like white-knuckled experiences that I've had recently in gaming, just because so much is riding on it. Like, you get to a boss and literally half an hour of progress behind you might be on the line, and it's up to you whether you can do it or not. It's a very strong flavor. You know, it's not quite as bad as I've been making it out to be, because there are, most of the levels have little touches. Like, you can, let's say you're going through a castle, you can cut the chains on a portcullis at one point so that the drawbridge will lower, and then every point after that you can take little shortcuts. So there are mechanisms to sort of speed. You don't have to completely repeat everything from the get-go every time, but you do have to play well. And I like the idea that, I really appreciate the fact that there's no hand-holding. Like, it's either you win on skill or you just don't beat Demon's Souls. So... That's about all I want to say about it. It's really worth playing, I think, but it takes time. You really have to give it some time. You can't even start to level up your character until you've beaten the final boss, which for me took 2 days of, or sorry, the first boss of just like getting.
I was gonna say
getting familiar.
Really?
No. I have not yet even cleared one world. There's 6 worlds. I've cleared like one boss of the first world and one boss of the second world. But it just, you know, you go in there, you quest for a little bit, and, you know, when you get hurt, instead of pulling, you know, instead of just dying and starting over from a checkpoint like you would do in most games, you actually have to have a point where you say to yourself, okay, I'm calling it. I'm aborting this mission, you know. I'm turning around. I'm hiking back. I'm going to lick my wounds, buy some healing potions, whatever. Make it back to the surface, and then I'll come back for another go, kind of Diablo style. The person who will ultimately beat Demon's Souls is the guy who's best at kind of knowing when to hold them and when to fold them like that, being very cautious, being very methodical. It's good, and of course it looks beautiful and plays beautifully. So That's my overly long analysis of Demon's Souls.
Right. I think we're going to have to move on now.
I like it.
All right. Well, okay, let's get to the releases.
All right. WiiWare downloadables. Let's see. Carnival King? Aha, I got it. Escape game. Yes, that's the title. Quote, aha, exclamation. I got it, exclamation, end quote. Escape game. Just so you know what it is. Family card game. Moving on. Virtual console. For the TurboGrafx CD, Fighting Street. That's right, the original Street Fighter. We also have the Sega Master System version of R-Type. DSi Sparkle Snapshots, which is another camera app made by Nintendo, its first party. Something called Viking Invasion, and something called Battle of Giants Dragons Bronze Edition. On XBLA, they released episodes 2, 3, and 4 of Wallace and Gromit. Also, PC owners, you can go to Telltale's website and get the third episode for free until Monday. Everyone should do that. They're good. An Xbox original came out this week, Battlefield 2, Modern Combat. On the PlayStation Network, Military Madness Nektaris and Numblast. Bunch of PSP games, Ben 10 Alien Force, Ben 10 Protector of Earth, Crimson Room Reverse, Class of Heroes, Dungeon Maker, Hunting Ground, Creature Defense, Numblast, Star Wars Battlefront Elite Squadron, Star Wars Clone Wars, Republic Heroes, Dissidia, Final Fantasy, and Ghostbusters. And the PS1 classic, although technically it's a 3DO classic, Gex. And then good old games struck a deal with Majesco this week, so we have Psychonauts and Advent Rising available.
All right. Stop touching your equipment.
Sorry, I had to touch my mic.
All right, Dragon Age Origins came out for PC, 360, and PS3. Band Hero came out for PS3, Wii, 360, everything I imagine. Star Wars The Force Unleashed, the Ultimate Sith Edition came out. Got blasted by GameSpot and 5.0. It's pretty funny. I never understood the appeal of that, since the whole Sith ending seems stupid to me in the first place. But there it is. Lego Rock Band for 360, PS3, and Wii. The Jak and Daxter, A Lost Frontier, came out for PSP and PS2. Interesting. Pro Evolution Soccer 2010 for 360 and PS3. Star Wars Battlefront Elite Squadron for PSP and DS. Shattered Horizon for PC. Need for Speed Nitro for the DS and Wii.
I wonder if that's any good.
Yeah, who knows. And Football Manager 2010 for PC and Mac. All right. So, that's our show, everybody. Beige, thanks for coming on again. It's good to hear from you.
Yep.
We still need to do our Uncharted 2 co-op and stuff sometime.
Yeah, anytime. Yeah. This weekend's busy for me, but
and me too.
Next week.
All right, then. Thanks for listening, everybody. You can find more of us at SquadronOfShame.com. Or at explodingbarrel.wordpress.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/explodingbarrel. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you again next time right here on the Exploding Barrel Podcast.
The Exploding Barrel what?
You heard me. Bye.